We're rolling.
You're listening to the Metamore City Podcast, special episode number 12, for Saturday, April 18th, 2009. Warning, this episode contains mature language, adult themes, and miscellaneous tomfoolery.
And immature humor.
You have been warned. Metamore City, a podcast series created by Chris Lester. For more information, please visit www.metamorecity.com. Hey there, ladies and gents. Welcome back to the Metamore City Podcast Feedback Show. This is Feedback Show Episode 5. I am Chris Lester.
I am Dan Sawyer, author of The Antithesis Progression and Sculpting God, which you can find at www.jdsawyer.net.
And I am Kitty Nakian, a random person that these two gentlemen have picked up from the street for no apparent reason.
No apparent reason?
I can think of a couple reasons.
Yeah.
Apparently, I'm also cute.
Apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So we are here. We were going to originally have Miss Calendar on as well, but last minute scheduling FUBAR made that impossible. So she will be on another show of Metamore City Feedback sometime in the future. For now, though, we are here reading your emails, listening to your voicemails, going off on fun little tangents and rabbit trails, and just generally engaging in...
Oh, look at a pretty rabbit.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a lot like that. We thought we'd get in one last feedback show before the end of the novel making the cut, because we have got a lot of people leaving responses to the last few episodes as we're getting down to the wire. So, if you have not listened to Making the Cut thus far, stop, turn around, go back. Do not listen to this unless you have caught up to episode 39, chapter 29 of Making the Cut.
Hey, your numbering convention is very confusing.
Yeah, that's what happens when you've got an anthology with novels and short stories running together in the same season. So, if you have not listened up through chapter 29 of Making the Cut, and you don't want to be spoiled on the big, scary revelations that happen. Yes.
Eek.
Scary like that. Then go back and listen to that before you listen to this. Otherwise, you will be spoiled. You have been warned. All right. So let's start off. The first thing, to establish some context, for those of you who haven't listened to Chapter 29 and are still listening, despite my objections to the contrary, Nina Kimberly, the Merciless, the nefarious barbarian warlord, has issued an ultimatum to the Podosphere in regard to her attempts to conquer the internet in preparation for her release of her new novel. Well, she issued her demands on the last episode of Metamore City, and I issued my stunning rebuke that we would fight and resist. And it was my
stunning is one word that that could spring to mind. Plagiarized is another.
Well, Winston Churchill's dead, so he's not going to bother me.
That's true. And it was public record.
Pretty much, yes. And I dare say that I delivered it better than his. I was going to play the original radio recording of his speech.
See, you cheated. You have to deliver it as well as he does on 4 scotches. Otherwise, you're cheating.
That explains so much.
And you can barely talk on 1 scotch. Sheesh.
As we demonstrated last time.
As we demonstrated, yes. Although I think that was on your show,
yeah, that was
not
on my
mine.
Show. And we record them all in one evening. So,
right.
If you guys are only listening to one half of the Feedback Show feed, you're missing out on more Chris Lester tomfoolery.
Yes, you've got to listen to Antithesis Dealing In episodes in order to get the full... feedback show experience.
Listen to them back to back and you begin to understand what we go through to generate this lovely content for you.
That's right, because we started recording at 7 p.m. today and it is now 10:45, and we are just starting the second show, so we are going to be slap happy as hell by the time this is done.
Either that or drunk.
I think I'm going to stay sober this time.
I've got some good scotch.
I know you have some good scotch. That's why I'm staying sober.
We've got people on Twitter saying, is Lester drunk yet? Is Lester drunk yet?
No.
And I said, no one's drunk yet. And everyone's like, there's still time, right? And from Shaure and David Dzwierik and...
Oh my.
These two other people.
Good grief. You guys. This gets into what.
They give me shit for corrupting you, but then they get upset when you don't get drunk on the mic.
Good grief, people. Make up your minds. Am I corrupt enough for you or not? No. Honestly.
Never.
From the man who made Malcolm Ardvalos and the. Psy Collective and that scene in the dance club. You think I'm dirtier than he is? Good God, people.
Yes, you are.
Shh.
Not to mention...
You have inside information.
And then, of course, there is the scene in Troubled Minds, which was written years before I met any of you people.
Yes, that's true. So, and you can't get much dirtier than a pederastic lesbian orgy with a bunch of demons.
It's not pederastic. There were no adults involved in that whole
thing. Oh, okay, that's true.
Can't be pederasty.
Then a coming-of-age lesbian orgy.
There you go.
With demons.
Yeah. We prefer the term Daedra. It's more circumspect. And there was just the one of her.
Played to stunning effect by Minx.
Oh, yes. Stunning. There's that word again.
But well, yes. It's Minx.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, as I was saying, you see what we meant about the rabbit trails, people?
Ooh, Nina, funny.
Nina Kimberly demanded that we turn over our listeners to her, and I basically told her where she could stick her generous offer of or ultimatum or whatever you want to call it. And now we have a response. So go ahead and play Nina Kimberly's response.
Greetings, Mr. Lester. Nina Kimberly the Merciless here. My scribe has informed me of your defiance and your refusal to surrender your podcast audience to me. I must say that I respect and even admire your courage. If I'm honest, I would have been disappointed if you had not put up a fight. That said, do not think my respect will gain you anything in the end. Metamore City is simply too big and too powerful for me to allow you to openly defy the rule of the Ook Horde. I heard in your voice that you will not submit, and so you force me to bypass you and encourage your subjects to overthrow you. Citizens of Metamore City, I am Nina Kimberly the Merciless, commander of the Ook Horde, and I want all of you to know that your scribe does not have your best interests at heart. He is foolishly refusing to submit to my demands out of his own personal pride. You may feel a sense of loyalty to him, but what has he brought you really? Conflict, tension, fighting, and bloodshed. He does not want peace for Metamore City. No, he thrives on your drama. Why can the Psy Collective and the vampires not coexist peacefully without all these cloak and dagger vendettas? Because Chris Lester incites them. Why are low-powered telepaths made to feel useless by their own people? It is not their elders that made this decision, but your own leader, Chris Lester, who dictated that they should operate this way. Murders, betrayals, espionage, dark secrets, and sinister conspiracies. This is what you have to look forward to under Chris Lester's rule. The Ook Horde does not want to destroy Metamore City. I, Nina Kimberly the Merciless, want Metamore City to thrive and prosper. But Chris Lester is not willing to put the best interests of Metamore citizens above his own pride. If you do not overthrow him and declare your alliance and allegiance to the Ook Horde, we will be forced to invade. This is not personal for anyone except Chris Lester. He may have created you, but only as his playthings for the entertainment and amusement of others. As a powerful ally to the Ook Horde, you can become more, and you can finally exist in peace. I expect to see Chris Lester brought before me. Preferably alive, but, you know, whatever. That is all.
Oh, boy.
Well, for what it is worth, those of our citizens who have responded to Nina's ultimatum have generally been in favor of the current regime. And I think that the fact that Nina chops a guy's head off in the first chapter of her book tells me that, well, let's just say that I find your arguments less than persuasive, Nina, you know, given the whole track record thing.
Yeah. And that poor dragon, too.
And anyway, even if what you were saying were true, what you are offering are the good citizens of Metamore is nothing more than a very pretty cage. It has been
as opposed to the dark and ugly cage they have now.
Well, now at least they have the opportunity for self-determination, for the chance to achieve greatness, to grow and to become more. If they were to lose their scribe, then they would become static.
Yeah, and, that's true. You know. She did. She also was wrong on the whole thing about you not submitting. It's not that you won't submit. It's just that she's not the right woman to get you to submit.
Very true. I'm reminded of a quote from a libertarian philosopher that I don't remember his name, but it's the quote has stuck with me for years, which is that man is everywhere a wolf, yet he longs to be a dog, and all that he asks is that his collar be comfortable and that his chain be long enough to give him the illusion of freedom. That is what Nina is offering you, ladies and gentlemen of Metamore. A very comfortable leash.
That's going to make her very popular at conventions.
Clearly, we're going to different conventions, you and I.
If she's going to Dragon Con this year.
I am not going to Dragon Con. I am going to Balticon.
Yes.
And I am going to Oricon, which is the Portland, the Oregon Science Fiction Society's annual convention.
Cool.
That's going to be at Thanksgiving weekend. And I am one of the four headlined special guests.
Nice.
Along with best-selling author Patricia Briggs and Orbitz editor Lou Anders.
How'd you pull that off?
The lady who is the coordinator for the convention is an ardent metamorph and a so she was a big fan of the show.
Excellent.
And wanted me out here. So
excellent.
She said, "Come up, will you come up to Portland on Thanksgiving weekend? We'll pay your way." And
is her name Laura?
Huh?
You said her name was Laura?
I didn't.
Oh, you
I
didn't
don't
say her name?
No, yeah. I didn't.
Oh. Whatever your name is, I take back everything bad I've ever said about Portland. And besides, you have the montage. It can't be all bad up there.
Yeah, there are a number of reasons for me to be happy about a visit to Portland.
What was that Pip said about dancing naked in the spotlight?
All right.
Naked!
Play the next voicemail.
Next voicemail before you get in too much trouble.
Hi, Chris. This is Amy Bowen, a.k.a. the Deadpan Ambassador. I'm replying to something you said in special episode number 9, Feedback Show episode 4, part 2. You were talking about androgynes, menstruation, and pregnancy. And you said that females who take the androgyne curse to become male have to spend at least half of their time in their male form, and therefore, for all practical intents and purposes, cannot become pregnant.
Right.
And how about males who take the curse to become female, as Daniel did? Is Dani still doomed to be useless to the collective?
Nope.
Or is there hope for her to be able to bear children because she is the curse-induced alternate form?
Exactly.
Or have we covered this before and I missed it?
I think so.
Yes.
Sorry if I'm putting you through another lengthy world-building session by asking this question. In any case, I'm absolutely loving the story and looking forward to the next episode. Bye.
Well, thank you, Amy. And yes, we did cover that before. With the Androgyne curse and with all of the variants of the curse, whatever you are cursed into is your dominant form, and you can spend an unlimited amount of time in that form or in an intermediate form that's precisely in between. This is why most theriomorphs can spend their unlimited amounts of time in this sort of half-animal, half-human form, because they don't build up any shifting stress when they're in that form. Now, if they attempt to switch over to become fully human for a period of time, then they accumulate shifting stress that they then have to pay back later. It's building up a sort of magical residue on their body that is putting them in debt that they have to then go back to all the way to the other end of the spectrum and spend time as a full animal form. And since that's rather inconvenient in modern society, most individuals don't do that. The Androgynes, because they remain fully human in all of their various forms, tend to flop back and forth between the extremes. Although there are some individuals who choose to ride the middle and choose to stay androgynous and sort of halfway between overtly male and female forms for long periods of time. That's another choice that they can use, or they can stay in their dominant form all the time. One thing that does happen, though, with the high-generation androgynes is that they tend to build up not shifting stress, but a sort of psychological stress if the repressed half of their ego doesn't get an outlet. So while...
Which is one of the MacGuffins for making the cut.
One of the MacGuffins, yes. So you've got when Dani is spending her long period of time in her Dani form... Daniel is remaining suppressed and is looking for an outlet, and he isn't getting it. And so it's causing some long-term psychological issues that need to be addressed and that eventually give them their opportunity to escape from Jared's influence. But there is no limit physically on how long Dani can stay in her female form, which is what allows her to still be a mother.
And, another lengthy world-building session? You think we would flinch at that? Oh, how little you know about authors and their egos.
Definitely.
Hello, Chris Lester. This is Ben Hathaway.
Hey, Ben.
I left a comment back in episode 4 or something. Very long-winded, vaguely pretentious discussion about some of the motivations behind your story. I'd love to carry on with that conversation, but at the time I decided that probably didn't need to do it in such an open forum. And anyway, I just wanted to say, number one, you are a bastard, definitely, for cliffhangering us like that again. And congratulations for inventing a new verb there, by the way. Not every day you invent a verb.
Okay, but, I have to give credit where credit is due here. I did not invent the verb cliffhangering. That, as far as I know, originates from the Seventh Son trilogy. And the responses that fans made to the repeated successive cliffhangers that J.C. Hutchins inflicted on his listeners week in, week out.
The most recent episode where Miriam gets it, best action you've written yet. The early chapters of Making the Cut, where you had the robbery and the siege and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bit hard to follow what was going on. Mm-hmm. I had listened to it twice and could follow. And this one just played gorgeous. I mean, it was very clear that you had the geography laid out perfectly. And every time I thought you were going to go so far over the top that I was going to have to throttle you, you pulled back just a little bit and kept riding that edge of plausible. And it played out brilliantly.
Thank you.
Even to the point when Daniel jumps off and goes, ah!
I'm like, you fucking moron. Theatrical, hello. And then she looks up because he needed her to look up to. And then I'm like, he saved himself again.
Yeah, I got some quotes, some comments from listeners who didn't catch why he did that. But yeah, it was I'm glad you caught why he did it. It was yoink.
What actually surprised me is that snap didn't take her head off.
Mm.
I mean, I know plot
off
reasons.
With her head.
I know you've told me the plot reasons why, but I was a little concerned about the physics there.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that would actually rip somebody's head off or not.
It depends on how much more than her he weighs, I think.
Right, could be.
And how far he was dropping, because the force increases exponentially. But
yeah,
but it still, even if you put the physics equations on paper and it didn't quite work, it still maintained riding that edge of plausibility. You didn't pull like a Terminator film thing on us or anything.
I loved writing that scene because all up through this in the story, Daniel has been kind of a schmuck.
Yeah.
He really has. And that's by design. It's the hero's journey. Luke Skywalker, when he starts out, is a schmuck. A complete and utter schmuck. And that's where Daniel starts too. But we've seen the seeds from chapter 2 of what Daniel was capable of. And now it's finally good for something.
Yeah.
We've seen it from chapter 1, what he was capable of. When you see them, you know, it opens with them in the Skyball Court.
Yep.
And so it was just really satisfying for me to put that together.
To fire that gun that you mounted on the wall in chapter 1.
Exactly. As I was mapping out the story, I always knew that I wanted Daniel to be in there at the scene, you know, the climactic battle scenes at the end. And I was like, well, what is it that Daniel's going to bring to this? Not being a psyop, not being a, you know, like this really hardened killer type person. What is the one piece that he can do? And actually, Brian Watson said this to me when I was in the process of writing. It's like, what is it that Daniel can give that nobody else can give? What's the
strategic guile?
Strategic guile. And of course, the physical, having trained his body to really understand how it moves in three dimensions.
Yeah.
You know, if you're making your career out of leaping from platform to platform and moving in relation to these things that are flying in open space, you're going to have really, really good hand-eye coordination.
Yeah, and it was nice to see that you caught that, because most people think two-dimensionally.
Mm-hmm.
That wonderful bit at the end of Star Trek II, they're trying to figure out how to beat Khan, and Spock says his pattern indicates two-dimensional thinking. So they start going down and up when he's still navigating on a plane. People who haven't done things like rock climbing or taking pilot lessons or hang gliding and that kind of thing think two-dimensionally rather than three-dimensionally. And that's, so it makes perfect sense that Daniel would be the one in there that isn't just thinking about who's on this gantry with me, but who is it above and behind me about to hang me? You know, and Miriam's not checking that. Being psychic, she's not checking that. And
particularly since she's also dealing with the blood ecstasy, which is a new experience for her. Well, relatively new at this
point. But yeah, when I was learning Taekwondo, that was one of the things in, you know, they teach you the forms and the weapons, and then they teach you the street fighting stuff that you can't use in the tournament, but you should know. And awareness drills, like they drill cops on, was part of the training. And you learn to look up and look down and think about things that are above, as most people see in a channel, about 2 feet above and below their eye level. Which is why you've taken martial arts as well, right?
Very, very little, just enough to kind of get a little feel for how it goes.
But one of the things you learn when you're a couple belts up is learning how to do your drops really well. 'Cause you drop or in long slow or the really long low steps, you come in under someone's threshold of vision, you can literally be right in front of them and they won't see you. And it was so much fun to see that all displayed in that scene.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very satisfying for me, too, to have those character, all of my characters really cut loose and showed what they could do in that scene.
I've been following your story religiously, and it is fantastic. It is too small a word. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying it. I just wanted to say a couple of things. First off, kudos for tackling such difficult, complicated social questions in a like this. I mean, you're not shying away at all from any of the difficult issues.
Man love.
And also, even more impressively, I think there's some unique stuff here, a unique drive behind the story even. I mean, people talk about the seed at the center of a story, right? Maybe I'm just not well read enough, but it seems to me that some of the drives behind the characters you have here, I've never seen it elsewhere. I've never seen it on a or read about it or ever had the characters pushed to such lengths by these almost a unique. I mean, you could say that Rebecca and Daniel are, you know, star-crossed lovers, but it's more than that. Mm-hmm. There's more to it than that, and having Danny and Daniel split. That's a whole new twist on the ex-girlfriend phenomenon. You know, if you go back and meet someone that, from years ago and find that they've actually split into two people, fascinating, fascinating, brilliant, wonderful. Keep going. Can't wait for number two. And I only wish I had half your talent for storytelling. So anyway, thanks a lot. Bye.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you very much, Ben. Ladies and gents, that is Ben Hathaway. You may recall from one of our earliest episodes, he is working with a orphanage in Tanzania.
Oh, cool. And
so he, they like have this shared internet connection that they use to download audio, and because there's no television out there, there's no radio to speak of, but they have internet access.
You like unconventional characters, Ben? antithesis.jdsawyer.net.
Oh yeah. Very unconventional.
Dude, middle of Tanzania, that rocks.
I know. They're doing some great work out there. I'm really happy to get the word out about what they're doing. I forget the name of his charity at the moment, but I will definitely put a link to it in the show notes. Cause
cool,
yeah, good stuff.
Cool, love that feedback too. Yes, and everything but the man love.
And yes, I'm sorry that I didn't respond to your message, Ben. I tried to, but then your internet was down for like a week, and my email server just gave up on sending the message to you. So hopefully, you'll have it back by now.
Hey Chris, this is Jarrett, and I just wanted to tell you that I started watching your podcast about 3 or 4 days ago, and I can't stop listening. It's an amazing experience. I love the stories, I love the characters, and I love that you have so many different voices and all these other podcasters can get together and work on a common project. I think it was 2 days ago that the feed went down for a little while when I was only on the very, like, chapter, like, the ninth audio cast that you had, and I couldn't find out how to get to more, and I was so pissed. I figured out how to do it. You helped me through the feedback email, and I got to catch up. I just finished making the cut chapter, what is it? Chapter 12, and it's amazing. I did enjoy, you had a quick clip of Patrick Rothfuss promoting your show. And I thought that was amazing because ever since I read his book, he's been like one of my favorite authors, even though he's only put out one book. It was really cool to have him, you know, promote your show.
Yeah, I ran into Patrick at, what convention was that? I think it was either Conclave or Confusion.
Love the names.
Yeah, the little cons up in Michigan that I was going to at the time, and I had my little digital voice recorder with me and went into these panels and would listen to these authors and then get a chance to talk to them afterwards and say, hey, could I get a bumper for my show? But yeah, Patrick Rothfuss, his next book, the second book in his series, is out now. It is called The Wise Man's Fear. It looks like a really cool series. I've heard nothing but good stuff about it. I have a copy of his book, haven't gotten a chance to start reading the first one yet. But if you like his stuff, second book is out now, and you can get it just about anywhere.
I first heard about your show through the Leviathan Chronicles, which was actually the first audiobook I ever listened to. I found it through StumbleUpon. And he mentioned Metamore City. And I heard the trailer through his show, and I figured, you know what? Yeah, I'll give it a try. And I've been hooked ever since. Keep up the good work. I wanted to say that I'm going to post a review on my blog, my WordPress. And if you want a link to that, I'll send it to you through this email. Okay, have a great night. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jared. And thank you to the folks at the Leviathan Chronicles for spreading the word about Metamore. I definitely appreciate that.
Chris Lester, this is Lady Justice. I first heard about Metamore City podcast while listening to one of the promos on Nobilis's show. I'm already a huge fan of Nobilis. So I decided I had to come and check it out. And wow, let me just say, Metamore City has absolutely blown me away, especially after today, since I just finished listening to chapter 14. Hot. Words just
is that the dancing chapter?
I probably shouldn't have been listening to it at work, but
we're both getting a lot of those tonight.
Chapter 14 is the sex scene between Jared and Danny.
Ah, okay.
My first actual, well, not my first erotic scene, but the first explicit erotic scene.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Nice to get props for those milestones, ain't it?
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to get caught up. I cannot put the iPod away, especially when I'm listening to Metamore City. So you did a totally awesome job. There is no question, no doubt whatsoever that you are a gifted individual. So I just wanted to send a big thank you, Chris, to spicing up my life, even if I was sitting at my desk blushing today. Awesome job. Keep up the great work. I also wanted to ask you, do you have a female audition piece for Metamore City? Because I would love to offer up my voice and contribute in some way. I am such a huge fan. So if you would, just shoot me an email and let me know, man. Keep it up. I love it. Thanks, Chris.
Well, thank you very much, Lady Justice. Cool. Yeah, and you have an awesome voice.
Yes.
And I definitely have plans for you for an audition for next season, Metamore City Season 2. We're going to have several female characters that are going to need voices. And I'm sure that we can fit you in for one of those.
Yeah, and if you're familiar with my work at all, I've got down from 10 pretty much fully cast, but there's one cast member who might not work out due to scheduling difficulties, and I need a second string, and your voice totally fits the part.
Hi, Chris. This is Michael Spence. Listen, I've been listening to a feedback show called Revenge of the Listener, and it occurred to me to ask, is your scheme of naming these shows your subtle way of telling us that you only expect to have 9 of these, and furthermore that you yourself will have nothing to do with the final 3? Just asking.
I love Michael.
Oh, yes. No, there are not going to be 9. There will only be 6, at least for the first season. Because this is the second to last one that we're doing, and then there will be the exit interview, which will be the last feedback episode, and that will actually be a live recording with live callers if we can get it all to work.
And if we get enough people calling in at the
right time.
That's always the risk with the live shows.
Yes, it is. So yeah, that's the plan. There will be 6 episodes, and then for next season's feedback shows, we'll have a completely different naming scheme. I'm thinking riffing on Star Trek movie titles.
Gentlemen, this is Michael Spence again. Listening to Revenge of the Listener, I hear Dan talking about how the underlying morality of Metamore City is an American or Americanized Catholic morality, comparable with J.R.R. Tolkien's Briticized Catholic morality. And while I'm not questioning the American and British, but I'm curious, Catholic morality, would that be distinguished from, say, a Presbyterian or Methodist morality? And if so, how? I'm curious.
Ooh, fun question.
Dan, you're the one who said it.
I think it would be. What I meant by that particularly is the strong fundamental dualism. Protestantism has more consistently historically seen, now I don't mean people in the pews, I'm talking about the theological traditions, has more consistently seen human morality as a domain of shades of gray, because Protestant doctrine says we're fundamentally fallen, period, there's no chance of being good. This is particularly true in Calvinism, but it is also true, though a bit more soft-pedaled, in Arminianism.
Mm-hmm.
So Protestant theology always sees human morality in shades of gray, even though there is the big good and the big evil. We walk in this middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic view of human nature of the battle between God and Satan, first of all, sees it much more as a battle between God and Satan, which God will eventually win.
Or between Michael and Satan.
Or between Michael and
Satan. C.S. Lewis.
Well, yeah, but C.S. Lewis was an Anglican, not a Catholic.
Yeah, but they're so close to Catholic that it, yeah.
The theological traditions diverged pretty solidly, and Anglicanism was a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But
you're lucky I'm Church of England.
Yeah, exactly.
Cake or death?
Death, please. I mean, cake.
You said death. But the Catholic cosmogony is much more strongly dualistic, with Satan on one side and God on another, and mankind being fought over and tugged one way or another, like the ancient Gnostics believed it was. It's something that Catholicism carries forward from Gnosticism and Zoroastrianism, whereas Protestantism, one of the things that the Protestants rejected in the Reformation was the notion that Satan is in any way capable of really screwing things up for God.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, despite what you hear in charismatic churches and what Martin Luther started writing about in his old age when he was farting at Satan all the time, he did read his books. Protestant theology has generally seen Satan as an agent of God, even though he doesn't like it, whereas Catholic theology has more, and an enemy of man, whereas Catholic theology has more often seen Satan as an enemy of God as well as an enemy of man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting way of putting it, and I like that description. And for the purposes of fantasy, high fantasy works a lot better in a highly dualistic worldview. Even if you have all of those interesting shades of gray, it definitely helps the fantasy tropes to have true light and true darkness be actual forces in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Metamore City mixes it up a little bit in that you have also the gods and Daedra, who are kind of false reflections of light and darkness, in the sense that they pretend to embody these certain virtues or vices, but they aren't necessarily very good at it, or their embodiment of them is sort of mixed up with the fact that they are, you know, essentially limited creatures that have very human personalities, and they're a lot like if you crossed the dualism of Zoroastrianism or Catholic cosmogony. With the Greek gods, you know, if you could split the Greek pantheon into
the good guys and the bad guys,
which you can't in actual Greek,
you can only do that by story by story, that
exactly. So if you take that sort of pantheon full of very persnickety deities and divided them up along an alignment axis. Mm-hmm. Then you end up with the Aedra and the Daedra, and they're still not quite... It still gets fuzzy in the middle, because you've got some Aedra lords who really don't give a damn about being all that good, and some Daedra lords who are actually quite... They're really friends of mankind in their own oddball ways.
Yep. And to reference back for the listeners that didn't hear the previous conversation, Chris and I were going back and forth on how the moral universe of Metamore City is idealistic, whereas the moral universe of the Antithesis Progression is pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're self-consciously each. Chris is exploring ideals and how people cope with being torn between ideals and fall short of their ideals and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas...
And cope with the need to be pragmatic in the real world in spite of your ideals.
Right, and... Whereas my story comes at it very much from the other end. My characters are all pragmatists. Some of them feel guilty about having lost their ideals, but they are all faced with choices in which there is no right answer. There are only better and worse options. It's a very gray book, morally speaking. And it's because one of the things I've always liked about noir is that noir's moral compass works by stripping the virtues away till you've only got one left, and then dancing around that one to see how that affects everything else. And you can see how it affects everything else by the absence of everything else and how it changes.
What is the one virtue in Antithesis?
That's a good question. Integrity, I think, is the virtue in Antithesis.
Good one.
Yeah, it is. I'm thinking through all the stories coming, and that's the one that keeps coming up through all five books, is integrity.
And how do you define integrity?
In a number of different ways. There is integrity of the internal integrity, acting in accordance with the person that you are, rather than betraying your own fundamental principles or working into situations where you have to so act against your own sense of self that you erase yourself. That's what Percy is in the middle of doing. Percy, in attempting to preserve one kind of integrity, is betraying another.
Mm-hmm. And is thus eroding the supports for his whole sense of self.
Yeah. Another kind of integrity is being true to one's word.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that everybody is dancing on. Even the bad guys are dancing on how to be true to their words and still not wreck the world, you know.
Yeah.
Or not wreck the things they value in the world. And both true to one's word in the sense of being what you tell people who trust you that you are, and also keeping your promises, which is something they're all really, really strung out on. And then integrity in the third sense, that of having the different aspects of your life integrated with one another, so that rather than compartmentalizing, you know, this relationship over here, that profession over here, this relationship here, that loyalty there.
Boy, Cassie and Joss are really fractured like that.
Well, but they're less fractured like that than Percy is.
True.
And you know, all the different characters compartmentalize things in different ways. And as you see, as we're coming up to the end here, how fewer and fewer of them are able to preserve that compartmentalization option. All those different compartments are smashing together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, again, carries through all five books. So integrity in those three senses is the virtue in the world of predestination.
Very good. I'm thinking about the conversation that happened at the end of chapter 24, where you have Cassie and Joss basically asking each other if they can trust one another, and the answer that they both give is a very honest no. And
maybe an honest no.
Well, as far as they're able to divine their own motives, they believe that it's true when they're saying it.
And yeah. Well, remember what Cassie said. She wanted to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
But if he was asking her for unconditional trust, then he was either false or he was planning something so disastrous that she wouldn't be able to stick with him.
Right.
So even though she thinks he really should be able to trust her, she says no to protect herself and him from the ramifications of her promising that.
Right. So she upholds her integrity in one sense, by basically telling him that she can't, he can't count on another virtue, which is loyalty.
Yep.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that scene because it all does come right together in that scene. The whole moral point of the book is right there.
Good stuff.
The moral point. I'm not really making a point, but the all the moral issues in play in the book are shown in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cards are on the table, not to abuse the already tired metaphor of the book.
Indeed. All right. Next one.
Next.
Hello, Chris and Ben, Kitty and Miss Callender. It's me again, Feline from Austria. Yes, it is actually pronounced with the E at the end, but you got my surname right when you tried to pronounce it last time, so yay, Chris. I have another Androtron-related question for you. Several questions, actually. Maybe you answered some of them already when you described Danny's first experiences with shifting from one sex to the other, but I'm way too lazy to go back and listen to those episodes again now, when I can just as easily ask you and you have something to talk about on your feedback show.
Yay!
So here goes. When I asked about androgynes and their period last time, you explained that shifting from one sex to the other is practically an equivalent to pressing a reset button for the body, with uterine cycles starting anew and stuff, right?
Right.
Now I ask myself, what about pubic hair or hair in general? Say you just shaved or waxed or whatever it is you do as a female, and now you're turning male. Usually you should now have hairy legs and all, because our bodies tend to come with at least some amount of hair. If you switch back to your female form now, do you have to start shaving all over again? Or is it possible to consciously influence the amount of body hair when changing sex? Similar to Danny's ability to consciously decide how curvy or non-curvy she wants her whole body to be, as demonstrated several times throughout the story.
Okay. First of all, Feline, I'm sorry that I mispronounced your name, and so I will remember that in the future, that the E at the end is pronounced. Hair is actually not alive, and so the hair that you have when you shift, you keep. The hair that is gone doesn't grow back instantaneously. When Artax gave Danny the sort of trial size version of the curse, he included a bit in there to make her hair grow out longer. That is really Artax's personal prejudices showing, because he likes women with longer hair. But the curse in itself does not make your hair grow out where you didn't have it before. You saw when she changed that the hair that was in the places where women don't have hair, or not thick, dark hair, as opposed to peach fuzz, that hair disappeared when she shifted to female for the first time. But she kept all of the hair in the lower parts of her legs and all of the other places that women and men both have hair. But once she depilated herself, then that hair did not come back when she shifted back to male form.
So basically, most androgynes are smoothies.
Most androgynes are smoothies. Yes, they tend to prefer staying, you know, a nice sleek look, the swimmer's look kind of a thing. And if you looked at Evan with his shirt off, yes, he does stay waxed there, because he does not
want hair growing on his boobs.
Ava would not want hair growing on her boobs. Yeah.
No, and as we know, Ava's the top.
Ava's the top. Sorry, T. Ava's definitely the top in that relationship. She's the dominant form in more than one sense.
We're
going
to get him to send in some, I am the top voicemail.
And then we'll just laugh and pat his head and say, that's nice. But yeah, hair does not.
Holding my tongue on the height joke.
It was implicit.
No.
But yes, shape-shifting while it will bring back the hair, you know, the living hair cells that produce the hair, it does not cause them to kick into overdrive and start producing hair faster. So they will keep the same haircut when they shift from one sex to the other, and they'll keep the same body hair that they had.
Along the same lines, you said switching from one sex to the other might help with the healing of smaller injuries. How does it work when someone wants to get a tattoo? Generally, getting a tattoo isn't that different from a graze you might get when falling down or something. Only someone puts ink into the wound and your skin doesn't get destroyed as much in the process. So when an androgyne gets a tattoo, what happens when he or she changes sex? Does the tattoo heal and vanish, or is it permanent? Maybe you just have to wait for a few days until the irritation from the procedure is gone, but wouldn't it still be an anomaly to have ink under one's skin? Isn't that something the body would try to heal when it gets the chance? Or have metamorphs come up with a different, maybe more sophisticated method of tattooing?
A tattoo, basically what you had guessed was correct. As long as you wait until after the irritation is done and the thing is healed, the ink stays in the body. The healing regeneration abilities of the androgynes do not allow them to do anything as extensive as actively exuding ink that was injected.
What about absorbing it, though? Is if it heal, if the tissue regeneration makes it heal, wouldn't it absorb more of the ink and make it fade more?
If it's been healed, if the whole area is healed at the time, and so you just got the...
Then there wouldn't be a change, right?
Right. It's not... Yeah, there's
nothing... But if it's fresh, like you just come out of the tattoo parlor, you know, that you've got cuts there, your tissue would force regenerate, and that would force more of the ink to absorb and squeeze some of it out, I would think.
Right, yeah, exactly. But for if it's a healed tattoo, it's something that you've had for a while, it's set, then shape-shifting is not going to get rid of it because your body recognizes that the tissue around it is intact, it's healthy, it's fine, it's not being disturbed by it. And anyway, the shape-shifting doesn't fix systemic poisons. Yeah, it doesn't fix systemic poisons, and it doesn't fix like viruses and things like that. It's only like
macro level
damage. Now, when a person first takes the curse, that initial transformation can do like more extensive corrections to serious bodily problems. There have been a number of people over Metamore's history who have come to Metamore and taken the curse specifically to be cured of terminal diseases that they had. But that's
like multiple sclerosis or ALS or
right. The
kind of thing that is a condition rather than a an infection.
Mm-hmm. Or even cancer.
Which is also a condition rather than an infection.
Right. Because when you first take the curse, that wholesale restructuring of the body can sort of fix those dramatic, broad-scale problems. But once you've gotten the curse, if you get sick again after that or develop a internal disease like cancer after that, you're really not going to be able to fix it alone.
Serious question about that. Conditions like MS and ALS and cancer, they're syndromes rather than diseases. They're they're malfunctioning bodily tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some of the things that cause them are infections.
Right.
But the conditions themselves aren't diseases. They're conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Say you're an androgyne and you swap every 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that regular whole-scale regeneration eliminate the conditions, even if it doesn't eliminate, say, if you've got HPV, it wouldn't eliminate the HPV from your system. It would eliminate the precancerous lesions on your cervix.
I think in some cases it might. I think some kinds of cancer probably wouldn't be affected by it, particularly anything affecting the bone marrow or the...
Because that part of the body... Wouldn't that part of the body change too, though? Because women's bones and men's bones are built very differently. The weight and strength is distributed differently throughout the body. The pelvis is wider in women and narrower in men.
It's a good question. I'm not sure. I don't know. I think I have a suspicion that the body would probably shift as little as possible and that the deep substructure would be less likely to change than the, you know, more...
The kind of thing you would need to actually map out the mass distribution if you were ever to do a medical thriller in Metamore City where that was an issue.
Yeah, And same thing with like internal organs that don't differ that much between men and women. Yeah, it's an interesting thought.
So like lungs would be almost identical. Heart might be a bit different.
But probably isn't going to change very much.
Liver would be quite a bit different. Mm-hmm. Intestines would be almost identical.
Mm-hmm. Kidneys probably aren't going to change very much.
Because they're not,
Mm-hmm.
Also, I have the same question about piercings. Don't they get healed when switching between male and female? Or do they stay permanently once the initial wound from actually piercing the skin is healed?
If you've still got the piercing in when you shapeshift, then it stays with you. But if you take your piercings out, then yeah, you're going to probably heal up those holes.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing your answers on this. Until next time, greetings from a very sunny and generally springy Vienna, Austria. I hope you had fun listening to this. I guess I should go do my homework for university now. So, bye.
I hear Vienna is gorgeous. Mm. I've always wanted to go. Juice!
Chris.
Juice.
T-C-H-U, sharpest S. It's goodbye in a friendly fashion in German.
Ah, okay. Good to know. I do not know very much German at all.
Lovely language. Gets a terrible reputation because of World War II.
Mm.
But it's really a very beautiful language.
Mm. Well, thank you very much, Felina. And really appreciate you sending in your voice comments. I know you had expressed some concern because, as you said when you in your email, when you think in American accent, but when you talk, it comes out Austrian. So I appreciate you taking that step and sharing your voice with us.
And as an accent junkie myself, you have a gorgeous voice. Please call in again.
Yes.
Call into my show. Would love to hear it there, too.
Yes. But I hope that my answers were suitably entertaining for you and that you're enjoying spring in Vienna. Springtime in Vienna.
I almost busted into springtime for Hitler.
That would be a bit gauche, wouldn't it?
It really would.
She has a funny comment in her SIG file. It says, "The Eagles have defeated the Giants and must now take on the Cardinals in Phoenix. Is it me or does this all sound like some sort of Celtic folktale?"
Nice.
Hi, Chris. It's Charlie, a.k.a. Conundrum. Just stopping in to offer my respects and see how much I'm enjoying the story. Amazing work. Not a few twists and turns and I have to love the cliffhangers.
God, I love his voice.
Chapter 29, Making the Cut, was amazing. I really enjoyed your description of time slowing to a crawl. While I can neither confirm nor deny Black Ops work in my past, I have been fortunate enough to do my share of martial arts training. The time dilation effect is something I have encountered in a couple of sparring matches. Unfortunately, my time is short. So keep up the great work. Best to Dan, Kitty, and Miss Calendar. Oh, Dan.
Yeah.
Still working on that death threat. Delays, but what the heck?
Excellent.
Suspense is part of the equation, too, now ain't it? Take care.
I take it that's a bit of revenge. Conundrum, if you would like to help voice some of the trailers for Down from 10 and you've got a good recording set up, I would totally dig that.
Yeah.
I love that voice.
Yeah, you've got a great voice, man. Good set of pipes there. And now, it's matter of fact, it was so awesome that I've completely forgot what you said. Oh, that's right, about the time dilation effect.
Yes,
I have experienced that once in my life that I can recall. It was when I spun out in a minivan on a patch of black ice on I-80 at 3 o'clock in the morning outside in going through Ohio. And it was completely unexpected. I was going about 80 miles an hour and hit a patch of black ice, and the minivan started spinning. And I'm like, I'm going to die. And it was this very strange, detached feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And spun around, the front end scraped up against the thick snowbanks that had accumulated along the sides of the railings. And skidded that way at 90 degrees to the road until one of my tires caught and then spun me around the rest of the way.
It's good only one of them caught. If two of them caught on the same side, you'd have been flipped.
Yes, that would not have been good. And ended up with the car stopped and stalled, pointing roughly, I'd say, 30 degrees off of center from the road.
This is, by the way, why I will never buy an automatic. Mm-hmm. The one of the two cars I have right now is an automatic, mm-hmm. but I essentially got it for free.
Okay.
I will never buy an automatic because in an automatic, when you break loose like that, you're at the mercy of physics. In a manual, you can use the clutch. You can very carefully apply extra spin and force to the equation and change the odds, which I've done on more than a couple of occasions. It saved my life.
Wow.
But yeah, time dilation, so much fun.
Not until at the you time
get
to it the, wasn't.
Until you get afterwards and you realize, oh yeah, I was about to die, huh?
For me, it was this very strange detached feeling, and it was like, I'm totally helpless here. I hope that somebody doesn't come careening down the road like I was and run into my back end. But fortunately, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. There was nobody else on the road.
I was driving once in Portland in my Firebird. And I was actually only doing about 30 miles an hour because there was 3 inches of ice on the road. And in Oregon, they allow at the time, I don't know if they've changed the law, but at the time they allowed semi-trailers or semi-tractors to carry 3 trailers instead of 2, which is the limit in California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're still carrying 3 in Oregon because I saw a lot of them like that.
I had to go pick someone up at the airport, which was a 40-mile drive from where I was living around Portland the long way.
Mm.
Because the roads in central Portland were closed sensibly from the ice storm.
Nice.
So I had to go the long way around, and I'm sitting here tooling along at about 30 miles an hour. Got a good solid grip on the road. Not feeling anything shimmy. And some bozo in a tractor trailer decided that 50, 60 miles an hour in a tractor on 3 inches of ice is a perfectly sensible way to travel.
Oh, dear God.
And he blew by me in the fast lane. And the wake, the jet wash, except it's from a car.
Yeah.
The wind that he pushed flipped me backwards. So I'm sitting here in the third of 4 lanes, going 30 miles an hour on I-205 backwards. I'm still in gear, you know. So I popped it into neutral because I don't want to start going the other way, particularly in this, because there's this poor guy in a Civic who was tailgating me.
Oh no!
So he's sitting back there, his eyes bugging out, and white knuckle gripping the wheel, and he can't brake because we're on ice, right? I'm sure he's trying to, but he's not getting any farther away because however fast he's slowing down, I'm slowing down at the same speed with friction.
Oh boy!
And he's like, at which point I think, God, I'm glad I had that precision driving training.
Jeez, no kidding.
And I popped the car into second, and I dropped the clutch and cranked the wheel so that I add the extra spin to flip me around. Unfortunately, Firebirds have a lot of torque.
Mm.
They've got a lot of torque. Even the ones with the wimpy 6-cylinder engine like I had.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I thought should flip me back around would have flipped me back around if I was like on a wet surface or a sandy surface. On ice, sort of turned me into a carousel. And I went whoosh, whoosh, whoosh across all three lanes of traffic. Fortunately, no one was on the road.
Oh, bloody hell.
Into the ditch on the other side.
Except for the poor schmuck in the Civic.
Except for the poor schmuck in the Civic who's sitting there having a coronary. Into the ditch on the other side. Now, and I went ass first into the ditch, right? So I don't have any way to get out. Oh, my car's balancing on the frame. And I can spin the wheels all I want. It's not getting me anywhere. There's only water down there. And I wound up, fortunately, being pulled out by a nice guy who had a rope before the cops found me. Because with a California license plate, they would have ticketed me. even if there was no evidence of a real accident, it would have given me reckless drive. I got ticketed once for doing 1 mile an hour over the speed limit up there because they thought, hey, he's got a California plate. He won't come back to go to court and get it thrown out.
Wow.
So I was a student up there at the time, so I did go back to court and get it thrown out. They were kind of like, but yeah.
Wow.
Time dilation. Wow. Fun stuff.
Sometimes helpful.
Yeah.
If you can actually do something about it.
Mm-hmm. If you ever want to take precision driving courses, they offer them up at Sears Point Raceway up in up on the North Coast. And a really, really cool place. Yeah, expensive, but definitely worth it.
Good to know. Next one.
Next one.
Head bleh. Good evening, Mr. Lester. I just finished listening to the latest episode of the Metamore City podcast, in which people finally call out Miriam Bakhtovar on her vampire problem. So, just wanted to say,
is that a euphemism?
Love in her Miriam Bakhtovar, but that's a different story. What did I want to accomplish with this feedback is, since I send you and Dan feedback after every episode,
and we love you for it.
You just want me to like bundle them up, and then when you're saying you're having a feedback show, I just email like a combined MP3?
No.
I don't know. Anyways, I loved this episode. I like to see that. I was always wondering how the hell Victor was going to go psycho or get into the hospital. Now we're starting to see everything starting to crash into each other, which is, of course, because we're in the last few chapters. I love you, Chris. Have my magical vampire babies. End communication.
Oh, man, he's stalking you, too.
Oh, between him and some of my other listeners, my life is going to be interesting at cons from now on.
Always, always, always bring a weapon. As part of your costume. I have a staff. Like, Sigler has his pimp cane, right?
Uh-huh.
I guarantee that's there to beat people off if they start deciding to kidnap him. You held that thing? It's fucking heavy. It's
no, like, I haven't. I have not seen
Soup
Bone.
Nice and sturdy. Ah, he was at BayCon last year.
Okay.
Had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've always thought that I could pull off a really good Harry Dresden, but I don't have a appropriate staff for it. So I would need to get a nice big gnarled staff and do some
rune carving.
You'd
probably do a good Boromir.
Yeah, I don't like Boromir. Boromir's a dick. And I can't do just, I mean, it's Sean freaking Bean. I can't follow that act.
Sean Bean just rocks.
He does. Sean Bean is to awesome, and I cannot. I cannot.
I can't believe you're using NetSpeak out loud.
Sorry.
You're a writer, man. Rise above. Resist.
I'm code switching.
Just wanted to say a couple things, give some feedback on the feedback, specifically with the fan fiction dreams comment, which was rather disturbing because I try to separate myself from those types of fans. I don't write fan fiction. I don't read fan fiction. I'm recording in Audacity, and I'm going to actually edit my feedback so I don't sound as long-winded. Anyway, in lieu of recent events, I'm excited for what's going to happen with Miriam. And also, if you make this feedback show sometime before the end of the book, your fans just need to know that they have no clue what they are in for. It's going to be great.
I take it you showed him the end of the book.
He read the end of the book and so that he could get started on his story, which is very vampire-centric.
Nice.
So, yeah, he needed to know what was going to happen.
Gotcha. By the way, Tristan, the Audacity noise reduction filter... decrease the threshold a little bit and up the frequency smoothing and you'll get rid of that artifacting.
Yes, please.
Talk about a quick incident that happened to me while I was watching Metamore City, and this might sound mean to you, but it isn't meant to be mean at all. I was listening to an episode, and I think
famous
I was about
words.
Maybe halfway through an episode of Making the Cut. I think it was the scene where Danny had come back to the collective, or the breeding cell of his friends, and was begging for, I don't know, his job back, her job back, and I paused it. I went to go do something. I came back, and I started playing again, and I had kind of lost the contextual thread of the story for a little bit. it. And of course, it sounds like a scene out of like The Young and the Restless or something. Oh, and I'm also about halfway through writing Circle of Blood. And if you haven't gotten it by now, I am a very bad metamorph. And one last idea. What if we could get Dan to go to Metamorph City and turn him into a theriomorph, but we make him into a half armadillo? Anyways, keep it nice and sweet. Thank you for the wonderful podcast. Thank you for sharing your vision, your MK2K with me, with us, with the interwebs. Thank you for playing my promo the other day. And I'm just going to leave you with some feedback.
God, how many levels of recursion can we get into?
I think we're now getting it. We're getting into cross recursive feedback between this feedback show and Dealing In.
So, yeah.
The death threats thing, the armadillo thing. Yep, you've got to be listening to Dealing In or you're going to be totally lost with the in jokes here. Well, thank you very much, Tristan. Always love hearing from you. Glad to hear that Circle of Blood is progressing well. As of this time, I've gotten...
Great title, by the way.
Yeah, it is. I've got the first piece of it. Don't have the whole story yet. And definitely looking forward to seeing it, because you've got some very cool ideas. For the rest of you, Tristan is the one who came up with the concept of the Drithyran Order within the vampires, the group that sees human beings as symbiotic partners within the larger tapestry of life, and believe that their position is to do good in the world and to actually help humans and be, you know, a positive force for them. So that will, what he's going to be doing with his story is showing us the backstory for Thaddeus Drithyra, who founded this system of philosophy. And we're going to see his story of how he got wrapped up with the other vampires and how he came to his beliefs. So should be laying some interesting groundwork for future episodes, particularly when Morgan finds out about the Drutherans.
Very cool.
Yeah, because she's been looking for her place in the world. And I think that once she buys into the fact that another vampire could have something that she would possibly want to listen to, yeah, you know, mm-hmm. could definitely help to point her in the right direction.
Cool. And by the way, season 2 of Metamore City, just the stuff that you've got on tap, what is Whispers in the Wood and...
The Cuckoo,
and what's the one that you're working on with the little girl?
Broken Angel. And Divide by Zero.
I haven't read Divide by Zero.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, I did?
That was...
Oh, that one was fun. I don't know how well that'll translate to audio, though. You're going to have to be very creative with the production.
Yeah, I've...
I think oppositional layering in different channels will help.
That's what I'm thinking.
But those are going to... Bad author. He hasn't actually written things on scene yet. Has barely started.
Yeah, I'm still in the plotting stage.
So he's trying to make up for the fact that he won't have it ready for 9909 by having all these short stories to warm you up at the beginning of next season.
Mm-hmm.
I, on the other hand, actually have to have Free Will ready for 9909, you bastard. I'll have 3 books done this year.
Bravo. I'm hoping to finish one.
Yeah, it's a big fucking one, though, that you've got to do. And you've written, like, 3 short stories so far this year, too.
Yeah, well, started. Yeah, I've got mostly finished.
Yeah, but the short stories that are coming up are really cool. Definitely, you know, as much fun as the first season's short stories were, these are all several steps above, even in their rough form. And you guys are in for treats.
Yay! Okay, last voice.
Last
name.
One by Tim Dodge.
Tim Dodge.
Hi, Chris. Tim Dodge here, and I have been mainlining Metamore City for the last couple of months anyway.
Yes.
And sad to say, today I finally got caught up. I listened to chapter 29, I think it was, whatever the episode was that you released on April 12th. And I just want to tell you how much I'm enjoying the story and how impressed I am with some of the voice actors you've got. I mean, they're all good, but I'm especially impressed with Brian Watson, especially because he's handling two roles really well, especially like him as Artax. Sarah Lloyd is terrific. the voice of Abby Preston, and I forget her name offhand.
Heather Nowak.
Just terrific. You put together a stellar cast. The sound effects and the music are excellent. And now I got to say, at one time, I imagine at one time you were considered a nice person, that probably you had friends and people who thought you were a nice guy, but you have become the quintessential cliffhangering bastard. And I'm going to be, now that I'm caught up, you know, I'm going to be on edge, you know, until at least next weekend. Hopefully it won't take any longer than
that. He's bouncing happily in his seat.
So keep up the good work. Keep cranking out a good story, and please don't be late with the next episode. Bye.
Thank you, Tim. I'm so glad. I'm glad that we're getting some love for some of the unsung heroes of Metamore City. Mm-hmm. My dear friends from back in Michigan who were going to the wall to help me make this podcast happen when I didn't know all that many people in the podcast community yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody knows and loves the voices of, you know, T. Morris and Pip Ballantyne and Christiana Ellis, but I'm really glad to hear some people giving shout-outs to some of my friends who are not professional voice actors, yeah. were not in podcasting before I got them roped into this, mm-hmm. and people are glad to, I'm glad to hear that people are appreciating the work that they put into this whole show. So you guys yeah. back home in Michigan.
You guys rock.
Yeah. And I miss you guys terribly.
You got to visit the Bay Area so I can meet some of you guys that I hear about when Chris has too much wine. Oh, yeah. What is there anything that you can offer him as salve for that terrible suspense that he's laboring under?
Well, Tim, if you are looking for some more cliffhangering bastardy in the time to hold you over between now and season two, allow me to recommend the upcoming Down from 10 by J. Daniel Sawyer, because I have read large portions of the story at this point, and the portions that I haven't read, I've read in script form, which they were originally written in. And guys, this is good shit, man. This is really good. It's going to be completely different from anything that you've heard in Antithesis or on Metamore City.
Or Sculpting God.
Sculpting God. This is, I don't even know where to begin to get the words to describe this, but
I think Agatha Christie and yeah. Douglas Adams team up to do The Shining. That's kind of what I was going for.
Nice. But yeah, it's like the rising paranoia, rising tension between all these people with these very disparate personalities, very colorful, very intelligent people who are all a little bit whacked and getting,
to say the least.
And get increasingly whacked as the... We've as the stress starts fever. To get to them. So, and all the time, this weird supernatural stuff is happening to them, and they're all sharing the same dreams, and strange things are happening around the house when they go to sleep at night, and there appears to be a traitor in their midst. It's really cool stuff, and it's like nothing you have ever heard or read before. So... check it out, Down from 10, jdsawyer.net this summer. You won't be sorry. It's going to be so awesome.
And, of course, our and your favorite podcaster, Chris Lester of the Forget Me Not Blue Eyes, will be playing one of the characters, as will T. Morris, as will Pip Ballantyne, as will a number of other familiar voices from around the podosphere.
And not surprisingly, because it seems to be the way things are going in my acting career in podcasting, I end up playing the asshole.
Yeah. He's got his redeeming qualities too.
Yeah, I suppose. It's kind. It's like what Steve Ely said when he was listening to his part as Nathan Levy in Metamore City. He says, "I don't like my character, but I have to confess he was well cast."
Well, you did a great job as Ryzen and as Greg Singh.
Thank you. Thank you. I am looking forward to doing some more of Greg Singh in future episodes of Antithesis, because it is a fun character.
Oh, he gets so much more fun. He becomes a big deal in book 2 and 3.
Oh, very nice. All right. So that will do it for the voicemails. And I'm just going to answer a couple of quick messages that people posted on Twitter here while we were talking. One of the messages that I got was asking, what happens now that the elder, Miriam, is dead? Does her story end here? All I'm going to say is listen for chapter 30 before you jump to conclusions, because vampires, when they get staked, they don't disintegrate. They don't. That's not the end for them. If you pull out the stake, they're back to life again.
It's more like Data's off switch than Buffy.
Exactly. These are more like Dracula vampires. They're a great deal more resilient than Buffy vamps. And if you want to really dust a vampire in Metamore City, you've got to use something like magical fire. You've got to
sunlight.
Yeah, sunlight. Cut off their head and immerse them in running water, you know, that sort of stuff. They can come back from a great deal, and the older that they are, the stronger that they are, the more resilient they are.
There can be only one.
Yes, cutting off the head is an important step.
Yes.
Unless you expose them to sunlight, which will dust just about any... Well, see, that's a little iffy, because vampires, stronger vampires, will just be weakened by sunlight. It's not enough.
I'm tired enough that I'm making hyper weird associations. Did you ever read The Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul?
I did not.
There's a television commercial in it for a soft drink called Shades. Mm-hmm. And the television commercial has Satan being thrown out of heaven into hell. Where he finds himself in a lake of fire and then gets up on a floating little rafty thing and he picks up a can of Shades and says, "Ah, now we're really cooking. I would really fall for this stuff."
Oh.
And then the can rotates so the S is obscured and it says 80s.
But yes, direct sunlight kills vampires. Indirect sunlight just weakens them, like Dracula was weakened, if you ever actually read the original book, mm-hmm. or saw the Bram Stoker's Dracula movie, which was very true to the original material. In some ways, at least. In that part, at least, they got right.
That's true.
So that one, yes, wait for chapter 30 and you will find out. Wait for chapter 30 and 31 to get the full scope of Miriam's fate. The other thing that people asked about, and it was a message that I got both in email and in Twitter today, was, do any of the nations of the Metamore City universe have a space program? And funny you should mention that. Because Dan Sawyer is going to be writing a story for season 2 of Metamore City that focuses on the Imperial Space Agency and its goings on a ore refinery station out at the L4 balance point between...
Lagrange Point.
Yeah, it's not called the Lagrange Point in Metamore City because the Lagrange didn't live.
I think it's Lagrange rather than Lagrange, isn't it?
Maybe it is. Well, there's another term for the L points that also begins with L, which is the term that I use in Metamore City because it's not actually named after a person.
Anybody, right.
But yes, it's one of those gravitational equidistant points that sort of forms the third side of a triangle between the Earth and the Moon. Uh-huh. And they have a asteroid ore processing facility out there, which is quite extensive. And the reason for this is because a great many of the natural resources on Earth are locked down and away from people's access because of native spirits and genius loci and other creatures that do not want people tearing up their backyard and taking their natural resources. So they had to go somewhere else. And so that was definitely a pressure on the space program. So, Dan, tell us a little bit about the story you're going to be writing for season two.
Well, in space, where no one has much magic because there are no naturally occurring mana fountains, somebody is killed. Someone is murdered quite brutally in a locked room during a orgy when everybody is accounted for. All the personnel of the space station except the murdered person were in each other's presence at the time the murder happened. The body is discovered, and no one knows who it could be. And a pair, a Holmes and Watson type pair of people who don't like each other that much wind up teaming up to solve the mystery while an asteroid is heading for the space station and maybe for Earth. And the mana batteries are depleting to the point where they can't maintain life support, and the entire station may have to be evacuated. But if it's evacuated, they may not be able to deflect the asteroid from going to Earth and killing everybody. So they have to solve the mystery in order to find the missing mana batteries and save the Earth and solve the murder.
I love it. I can't wait. I laid out the basic premise for the kind of story that I wanted to tell, and Dan has just taken it to the next level, and I cannot wait to see the finished product. Because
I believe you said locked room mystery on a space station that establishes these elements of the world.
Exactly.
And I emailed you back with this list of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get magic from doing this? How about from this? How about from this?
Mm-hmm.
Can you use magic in this way, this way, and this way?
Yep. And with that information.
Uh-huh. I let my twisted little brain go to work.
And it's going to be some good stuff, ladies and gents.
I hope just so. Wait. I'm glad I've got until September to write it, though, because I've got two books to finish before that.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
I just dumped a week into writing erotica a la carte, and I'm like, got to get back to Down from 10, got to get back to Down from 10, got to get back to...
Okay. Well, we are going to stop this voicemail show here because Kitty had to abandon us. She is not feeling well, and it is already approaching 12:30 in the morning.
And we've been recording for an hour and 40 minutes.
Yes, so this will be a good-sized feedback show all by itself. We will get to your emails next time. But for now, if you want to contribute to the conversation, you can call into our voicemail line, which is 206-203-0994. That is 206-203-0994. You can send your messages in text or audio to feedback@metamorecity.com. You can comment on the blog at metamorecity.com, on the discussion forums at thecursed.org, on the Facebook Fans of Metamore City page. You can reach me on Twitter as Ethereus, E-T-H-E-R-I-U-S, and on Skype as C.W. Lester. Dan, where can they find you?
You can find all my stuff, my short story anthology, Sculpting God, my book, Antithesis, or, well, Predestination, book one of the Antithesis Progression, and my upcoming book, Down from 10, at www.jdsawyer.net, as well as my nonfiction podcast, which will tickle the intellects of those of you who are far too geeky for your own good.
All right, that'll do it for this feedback show. And on behalf of Kitty, I am Chris Lester.
And I am Dan Sawyer.
And we're signing out.
Keep it on the dark side. Upright side, I'm sorry. Thought I was in the wrong show.
Later, gang.
Some of the music on this show is provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Some sound effects were provided by SoundSnap at soundsnap.com, while others were provided by the Freesound Project, located at freesound.iua.upf.edu. Metamore City is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.